I want to tell you that a clear plan is prepared for reaching stability in 6 months, and the implementation of the plan has started.
Afghan president announces plan to counter Taliban. It's Wednesday, August 4th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, isolated tribe in Indonesia survives pandemic online. COVID hospitalizations surge in southern U.S. Asian Americans a rising force in U.S. politics. Foreign student athletes see visas overrule pay. 16-year-old Chinese gymnast wins gold. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Taliban pressed ahead with their advances in southern Afghanistan on Tuesday, capturing 9 out of 10 districts of the Helmand provincial capital, residents and officials said. The Afghan government forces launched airstrikes, backed by the U.S., in an effort to defend the city of Lashkargah. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani said on Monday the deteriorating security situation in Afghanistan is due to the, quote, abrupt decision by the U.S. to withdraw its troops from the country. President Ghani announced that he has a clear plan to counter Taliban offenses across the country. As VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Islamabad, Ghani's government has been criticized for seeming to lack a strategy.
Amid what appeared to be inexorable gains by Taliban forces, President Ashraf Ghani said a new security plan will quickly change the situation on the battlefield. Ghani says, I want to tell you that a clear plan is prepared for reaching stability in 6 months, and the implementation of the plan has started. Ghani spoke before a joint session of parliament. The president only shared broad details of his plan Monday. The military is to defend strategic sites. The police will safeguard the cities. Meanwhile, Afghanistan's intelligence agency, NDS, is to coordinate armed public uprisings against the Taliban. The United States is preparing to withdraw the last of its troops from Afghanistan by the end of this month. This has been America's longest-running war. After foreign forces started withdrawing from Afghanistan in May, militants made unexpectedly fast territorial gains. They now control half of all districts and several key international border crossings. Ghani has asked members of parliament to help mobilize the population in support of security forces. He says the Taliban will not engage in meaningful peace negotiations until the situation on the battlefield changes. In a statement following Ghani's address, parliament reiterated its support for the country's democracy, human rights, including women's rights and freedom of speech. Ghani's address comes at a time when the Taliban have increased attacks on Afghan cities, besieging several of them simultaneously. At least 3 cities, Kandahar, Herat, and Lashkargah, have seen intense fighting over the last few days. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
Be sure to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. As Taliban advances, Europe fears an Afghan migration crisis. Japan limits hospital access amid COVID-19 surge. New COVID-19 cases prompt mass testing in Wuhan, China. South Korea lawmakers, North Korea wants sanctions eased to restart talks with U.S. U.S. dismisses Myanmar election plan, urges ASEAN pressure. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Many isolated tribes have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. One such tribe in Indonesia is the Badawi tribe. They have been devastated economically. To survive, some members of the community have embraced a local taboo, as VOA's Rendy Wickoksana reports.
Sarga and Ayudewi are husband and wife YouTubers from the Outer Badawi tribe a traditional community in Indonesia's Banten province, about a four-hour drive from the Indonesian capital, Jakarta.
Buat teman-teman yang...
Since 2018, Sarka, who only goes by one name, started to post videos of his daily life as a Baduy millennial onto his YouTube channel. They gained popularity online. Some even garnered hundreds of thousands of viewers.
He uploaded contents about us farming, making souvenirs, like weaving.
Ayu weaves while I make bags out of woods.
Their viral success is a surprise, considering the Baduy tribe, like many traditional communities, shuns technology. These are around 18,000 Baduy tribe's people, residing in 68 different villages. The community consists of two groups, the Outer Baduy and Inner Baduy. Only three villages are now Inner Baduy, totally cut off from the outside world, while the Outer Baduy still interact with others and enjoy some modern conveniences.
Just like women in general, I enjoy soap operas.
In contrast to the majority of Indonesians who are Muslim, the Baduy people still uphold ancestral beliefs called Sunda Wiwitan, which venerate the power of nature and spirit ancestors. The belief system is regulated by Pikuku, restrictions on modern conveniences like automobiles and electricity.
There are indeed a lot of prohibitions in the Baduy tribe. Our elders taught us mountains are not to be smothered, valleys are not to be destroyed. As they are concerned, it may cause earth to slide, nature to quake, and hurricanes to devastate our nation.
Sarka and Ayu Dewi's embrace of social media hasn't gone unnoticed, as has the use of technology by many in the Outer Baduy communities.
Indeed, the elders are very concerned with this matter. Outer Baduy people who start embracing the use of technology are not with their permission. But for me personally, as long as they are not causing harm, it is still tolerated. But it should never corrupt customs and morals or disturb neighbors.
The Baduy used to rely on tourism, and the pandemic has hit them hard. For Sarka and Ayu, the internet provides them a contact-free alternative to market their handcrafts online.
We can no longer rely on offline sales since tourism is prohibited in Banten. Instead, we make advantage of online sales.
Sarka and Ayu are unaffected by their viral following. They prefer to use their internet only to promote their tribe to the outer world.
I'm happy if people watch and appreciate videos that I create. If not, it's just a mere entertainment for me.
From Banten, Indonesia, Randy Wicaksana, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, hospitalizations from COVID-19 are surging in the southern parts of the United States. Happening now in Asia, in an effort to contain the latest COVID-19 resurgence, Beijing has upgraded prevention and control measures in multiple provinces and cities. Official media reported Tuesday. On Monday, 61 new local cases were confirmed, according to the National Health Commission. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Hospitalizations from COVID-19 are surging in the southern parts of the United States, with some states seeing record high numbers of patients as the country faces a wave of coronavirus infections fueled by the Delta variant. Authorities in Louisiana, Florida, and Arkansas are reporting a fresh surge in coronavirus hospitalizations since the Delta variant has become dominant. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients said Friday that coronavirus cases are surging in areas with low vaccination rates. He added that the average number of people being vaccinated is on the rise.
In the last 7 days alone, 3 million Americans have gotten their first shot. That's the highest 7-day total since July 4th. And just today, we hit 70% of adults with at least one shot, including 90% of seniors with at least one shot. These are significant milestones in our fight against the virus. And it's very important to note, in the states with the highest case rates, daily vaccination rates have more than doubled.
In addition to fueling a demand for vaccines, the surge in new coronavirus cases has led authorities to reinstate mask requirements in hard-hit areas and introduce vaccine mandates at places of work. The mayor of Denver, Colorado, Michael Hancock, announced Monday the city will mandate all city employees and private sector workers in high-risk settings to be vaccinated against the virus by the end of September. New Jersey, New York, and California are also mandating that civil workers get vaccinated. President Joe Biden announced last week that millions of federal workers and contractors must show proof of vaccination or submit to regular COVID-19 tests. The White House announced on Tuesday that the U.S. has donated and shipped more than 110 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines to more than 60 countries, ranging from Afghanistan to Zambia. The doses the U.S. has donated through the global vaccine program known as COVAX represent a fraction of what is needed worldwide. The White House said in a statement that the U.S. at the end of August will begin shipping 500 million doses of Pfizer vaccine that it has pledged to 100 low-income countries by June of 2022. Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris will focus on defending international rules in the South China Sea, strengthening U.S. regional leadership, and expanding security cooperation on her upcoming trip to Vietnam and Singapore, according to a senior White House official. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Since the Voting Rights Act was signed into law 56 years ago, removing barriers to voting by African Americans, the face of the American electorate has evolved. During the 2020 election, Asian Americans made their voices heard. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details.
From the West Coast to the East Coast, Asian Americans in major U.S. cities flexed their political muscle in the 2020 presidential and congressional elections, contributing to a record voter turnout across the nation.
Asian Americans have really come into prominence as a new electoral force to be reckoned with.
The turnout of Asian American voters hit a record high of nearly 60% in 2020, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. More than half of them supported Democrat Joe Biden over Republican incumbent Donald Trump, and more Asian Americans favored Democrats than Republicans. Researchers say one reason for the historic increase in Asian American voter turnout over 2016 levels was a response to a wave of hate incidents against Asians in the U.S.
A number of studies have looked at the impact of feeling discriminated against, a sense of social exclusion, and how that really galvanizes Asian Americans to go out and get registered, to participate in elections.
Another record set, 21 Asian Americans elected to Congress in 2020, the most in the nation's history, and another incentive for Asians to head for the ballot box.
Every election cycle, we've seen an increase of Asian American and Pacific Islander participation. And every time that we see Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders on the ballot, it also increases voter turnout.
But researchers say Asian Americans are still underrepresented in public offices. Asians and Pacific Islanders make up 6% of the U.S. population, but make up less than 1% of elected officials. One factor? According to Pew Research and the U.S. Census, more than 70% of Asian American adults were born in another country. Some speak limited English, says Congresswoman Judy Chu, the first Chinese American woman elected to Congress.
We are a population where many may not be familiar with the American means of democracy. It takes a little while to get used to it, to know that your voice counts, and especially if you come from countries where there aren't real free and fair elections or maybe where there are no elections at all.
Newly elected in 2020, Michelle Steele of California became one of the first Korean-American women in Congress. She remembers the challenges of running for office as an immigrant.
Since I was born in Korea and raised in Japan, I have very shy personality. So it's harder to go out there with my accent than speaking in front of the people.
As more Asian Americans enter politics, Asian American voters are becoming more interested and engaged.
We want to see people that look like us on TV in positions of power and can spread the message and build the coalition and allyship that's needed for real change.
The change includes a new hate crimes law passed this year that addresses the rise in violence against Asian Americans. But not everyone is optimistic that changes will continue.
We see that as there is a rise in Asian hate, yes, we are being recognized more by our politicians, but I feel like once that is subsides, we probably will be in the shadows once again.
The Pew Research Center projects that Asian Americans will become the largest group of immigrants in the U.S. by 2055.
It's no longer a population that's quiet and not going to vote. They turned out in record numbers in 2020, and you know, you don't go back once you become activated.
Transforming a group traditionally marginalized by campaigns into a voting bloc that can potentially be the margin of victory in a political race. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Australia's Prime Minister on Tuesday rejected a proposal to pay people to be vaccinated against COVID-19, calling such action an insult to Australians. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, after the U.S. National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, announced that student athletes could profit off their name, image, and likeness, foreign student athletes remain in the dark. Connor Smith has this report for VOA.
Until recently, college athletes could not be compensated beyond scholarships. But the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, changed that after a June ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court said such policies violate antitrust laws. Now, American student athletes can be paid under a rule known as NIL, which stands for name, image, and likeness, for things like autographs, advertisements, or merchandise. But the rule's impact on international student athletes isn't clear yet.
I mean, I don't get the difference between international student athlete and American besides nationality, but at the end of the day, we're all humans, all athletes. Like, I don't get how your nationality should play a role.
Student visas held by players like Terrence Fall, a native of France, limit how much foreign students can earn. If the football player at Brigham Young University profited from his NIL, it could jeopardize his visa status to remain in the U.S. Immigration attorney Rob Seeger has advised universities and athletic programs. He says international student athletes should handle the new rule with caution.
Really, really be careful about it because, you know, a lot of players come here. They're not only here to gain their education, but, you know, depending on your sport, eventually maybe get, you know, looked at, drafted, and moved to another piece. You just don't want to do anything to impact your future in the short term.
Sports attorney Dan Lust says if an international student athlete receives payment, it could impact their eligibility to play and their immigration status.
I think it's a very slippery slope. And anytime, right, you don't have the answer to a question, and your eligibility is at stake, potentially your status to stay in America is at stake, I think you stay clear of these things.
Fall says he is confident that NIL rules will eventually allow international athletes to be paid, but plans to move carefully if he is offered a deal.
Yeah, we'll talk to them and then see what are my rights and what I'm able to do. And then if it ends up saying that it would affect my playing of football, then I wouldn't do it anymore. I wouldn't put no money over football.
Universities have been unable to offer guidance because the position of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services remains murky.
They just don't know what the government, you know, meaning immigration, is how they're ultimately going to come down on this.
Lust says all students, domestic and international, should be careful when considering an NIL deal.
So nothing is set in stone, and you really should be questioning everything that you assign and really assuming nothing.
Connor Smith for VOA News, Washington.
And now for the latest Olympic news. 16-year-old Chinese gymnast Guan Chenchen takes home the gold in the balance beam. And the U.S.'s Simone Biles takes the bronze in her anticipated return to competition. Steve Ross has more from Tokyo for VOA.
Simone Biles made her return to the Olympic Games on Tuesday evening, taking bronze in the balance beam final. Chinese teenager Guan Chenchen winning the gold. Out of competition for about a week due to what was called a mental health issue, Biles today revealed that her aunt had died 2 days prior. Biles' withdrawal and return to competition has helped spotlight the mental health struggle of athletes. Sunday night's men's high jump competition still has people talking. That's because Italy's Gianmarco Tamberi and Qatar's Mutaz Essa Barshim decided to share the gold medal. The longtime friends who have worked through similar ankle injuries decided not to go for an additional competitive round. Instead, they tied for the gold at a height of 2.37 meters. Some highlights from Tuesday's competition, Germany's Malaika Mihambo taking the gold in the women's long jump with a 7-meter leap in her final attempt. Norway's Carsten Warholm smashed his own world record in the Olympic 400-meter hurdles, finishing in 45.94 seconds, beating the previous time by over 7-tenths of a second. American Rye Benjamin finishing second with a time that also beat the record Warholm set just last month. In soccer, Spain beating host Japan 1-0 and Brazil winning a penalty shootout for victory over Mexico 4-1. So the final match will be defending champion Brazil facing Spain for the gold in men's soccer on Saturday. While some pre-Olympics opinion surveys showed that up to 80% of the Japanese opposed hosting the Summer Games during the COVID-19 pandemic, there are signs that the national opinion is shifting. This in part due to Japan's own medal haul, now ranking third behind China and the U.S. As of Tuesday evening, Japan taking home at least 19 gold, 6 silver, and 11 bronze medals. Join us tomorrow for more highlights. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
And finally, in tech news, small, self-navigating drones designed to think and move like bees could revolutionize the future of agriculture, search and rescue missions, and more. VOA's Julie Tabo gives us an exclusive look behind the scenes.
Small autonomous drones that can fly and navigate like bees are the vision of the future for a team of researchers at the University of Maryland. Yanis Alimonos is a professor at the Department of Computer Science at the university, where he heads the project.
They are very small flying mechanisms that are equipped with cameras, sensors, and computer, and they are able to perceive the world, think about it, make decisions, and act accordingly.
Yeah, I think we should make the drone a little bit smaller.
Soon, these self-navigating drones will be able to help pollinate flowers or work in environments that are dangerous for humans.
When this technology reaches the market, it will be very useful, you know, for dealing with search and rescue operations in terms of earthquakes, with inspections of bridges, with agriculture.
The drones are not controlled by a human with a joystick, but instead they use computer vision to see obstacles in their path and artificial intelligence to determine the best way around or through them. They've been designed to mimic the behavior of birds and bees to move and navigate through small openings. And they'll be launched in the field from a larger drone designed like a beehive to perform a multitude of tasks. Nitin Sanket is a doctoral candidate in Professor Yanis's group.
These drones open up a world of possibilities because if you want to deploy 1,000 drones, which are large, you want 1,000 operators, right? With these smaller ones, you just have a big drone and it carries 1,000 of these and goes to a point and it will just deploy it automatically.
The bee drones can travel more than 6 kilometers round trip. And while there are concerns about the potential misuse of these little machines, for now, the team is focusing on all the good they can be capable of. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.